Fred Film Radio, Galway Film Flaw, Ireland.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt McCucci from the 29th Galway Film Flaw, and I'm very pleased to be joined by director James Demo, who is presenting his film The Peacemaker here at the festival. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Matt.
So, the first question is kind of just the obligatory question. Would you be able to tell our listeners a little bit about the movie and just introduce it for them just as much as you'd like?
Sure. I'm going to do this right off a red-eye plane from New York. So, The Peacemaker is about international peacemaker Porrig O'Malley. Porrig has worked in some of the most significant conflicts, trying to solve them, from Northern Ireland, South Africa. He worked with Mandela to Iraq. And he has a peacemaking model based on his recovery from addiction. This idea that one alcoholic is in the best position to help another alcoholic is one culture in conflict is in the best position to help another culture in conflict. So he, for instance, brought the South Africans, the chief negotiators, into the Northern Irish conflicts. Famously, Mandela met with Martin McGuinness, Peter Robinson. And I follow him now in sort of the last act of his life as he's working this model in different conflict zones. So we go with him to Iraq, Nigeria, Kosovo. But, you know, for me, and I know you just saw the film really is a question of the why he does the work, not the how or the what. So, you know, it's very much an existential film. We see Porrig, I think, searching for meaning in the film in his own life, and it sort of manifests itself in this unique way.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little later on, because I did think that it was very interesting that you obviously examined that side of his life, the personal side of his life. But the second question that I want to ask you is quite simply, why did you decide to make this movie? And also, whether it was easy to get started and whether Porrig was wanted to get this film done.
Well, you know, I didn't necessarily set out to make a documentary. I did a small film before this that was a scripted comedy that was very different.
Yeah.
And I just came upon Porrig's story. I think when I sort of became a filmmaker, I said I was going to just tell the stories I wanted to tell. Porrig's story was really unique. My corner bar was the Plow and Stars that Porrig owned. Porrig was off in Iraq trying to help the Iraqis at the highest levels during the height of the insurgency, bringing in Northern Irish and the South Africans. And then I, you know, heard the backstory. Porrig was using the bar to finance the work. He was a recovering alcoholic. There was interesting paradoxes and themes in that. So I approached him through a mutual friend, and Porrig is incredibly honest. There's never any resistance. Porrig is an open book, as you see in the film. I knew, because of the nature of his work, has this really personal connection to his recovery, that we were going to go into the personal spaces.
Well, he did know that.
He did know that, yes. We talked about it often. I talked about it before I started. And I think it was, I'm happy that Porrig will say often that it's a very accurate telling of his life. The recovery piece and Porrig's struggle with recovery, as we see him struggle in the film, I think is really important, because it shows recovery, I think, the way it is for a lot of people, that recovery isn't sort of this destination where you find a meeting and all of a sudden the heavens open up. I think it's an ongoing process, not unlike these peace processes. Porrig struggles with a host of things, and is incredibly honest about that struggle in the film. And the recovery community has found the film for that reason. And the other thing I think people say is that even when you are struggling, you could still do incredible things, that your life has all of these different dimensions to them, and your recovery is a piece of it, of course, and an important one if you're struggling. So all kudos go to Porrig for being so honest and allowing the audience to enter these really personal spaces in his life.
So how long did it take to shoot? Did the documentary take to shoot?
Well, it took a long time. We shot for over a little over 5 years. I think it was, you know, it was the kind of thing where I think documentary, when it's done the way I like to see it done, is really very much an exploration. And I think I was really just open to what was happening. You know, I don't think that we could have done it in a shorter period of time.
In other words, you don't set out with knowing exactly where you want to get and having the whole thing structured already.
No. At least I don't work that way. I knew there were themes around addiction. I knew there were themes. There was this sort of paradox of a man who makes peace for others but struggles to find it for himself. I knew that was really evident to begin with. Yeah. But, you know, I think it takes time also in a really personal portrait like this to build a relationship and build trust. I mean, I think for the first year, I mean, we're talking a lot about the work, even though we're, you know, having other conversations. But it really, I think it takes time to sort of develop a relationship, to build trust with one another. And, you know, that thankfully was something that did happen.
Especially in discussing things like you mentioned earlier. Well, I thought it was very interesting to hear him talk about very human and real things like aging and his, you know, mortality in general. I guess you do have to build a level of trust before you start talking about it. Or maybe, you know, I could be saying something wrong there. Maybe it was the complete opposite. Maybe he enjoyed talking about these things. I mean, what was it?
Well, I mean, he often would talk about, you know, age and how that relates to where he is in his work. I think, you know, the interesting question is, you know, when someone's given their life over to their one thing, and in Porik's case, it's his work, you know, what is the existential question that arises out of it when, as we all age, we can't do what we once could do? You know, Porik is really lucky because, you know, there's very few people I would characterize as sort of genius-level people. I think Porik's one of them. So his intellect is able to make up for some of these deficits that he has as he ages. Yeah. But, you know, sooner or later, we all have to sort of take account of what we've given over our lives to, you know, certainly as a filmmaker. And what we do is, you know, we sometimes become really sort of focused on one thing when there are other things going on in our lives we should pay attention to. I think that is sort of with Porik, because he lives on such extremes, I think it's really something that manifests itself in a way that we all can relate to and see ourselves in it.
In fact, like, you know, especially when a documentary takes 5 years to shoot, it becomes part of your life in every way.
It does. Like, you know, it is. You know, Porik is a captivating person to be around. I think that I could relate very easily to someone who forsakes pretty much everything in his life to this one goal that he has. I think we would often be raising money at the same time, me for the film, him for his work, and we'd sort of be, you know, commiserating over, you know, the struggles of trying to do certain things, you know. But by the same token, I think that there's a moment where that could become unhealthy in some ways. And I think one of the things that the film hopefully shows, certainly shown to me, is that there you have to be able to find a balance.
Yes, when he talks about anxiety, that kind of got to me a little bit, because, you know, also he says something along the lines of, if I don't work every, you know, half to 3 or 4 hours, I definitely start to feel a little uneasy, and I need to get to work right away. So that's really something very... I'd never heard anyone say it in that way before. So that was,
well, I mean, Porik will tell you, I think, and I think it's pretty evident in the film, that he's transferred his addiction from alcohol to his work. Yeah. It's something that I think keeps the wolves at bay in a way. And we see him in the film going through withdrawal at times when he can't get the fix of going and doing the work, when he's in a conflict zone, when he's, you know, in the middle of something is when he really comes alive. And Porik is really very much two people, the person in the conflict zone that is larger than life, and then the person in his personal life that sits in that small, dark apartment. And, you know, we tried, even through visual storytelling, You know, the conflict zones are so colorful, and they're, you know, you're in Nigeria, you're in Iraq, you're in Kosovo, Northern Ireland. There's a, you know, a sort of stark beauty to those places, and then Pork would come home to the United States in Cambridge, and we would be in his, this sort of these confined spaces, mm-hmm. and he would be alone rather than with all these people.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, there's sort of a mirroring in the film where we're in this caravan in Iraq, and there's he's surrounded by all of these people. Mm. Towards the end of the film, he's by himself on that same road, using filming with a flip camera himself. So there's, you know, this idea of he's always going to be out there, even when we're not, you know, with him.
So thank you very much for joining us. It was a great pleasure talking to you about your movie. And
well,
best of luck.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed it.
So once again, I'd like to remind our listeners that your film is called The Peacemaker, and that this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.